Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler, and you can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Tuesday, May 13th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, and kick things off with the bad news, as shortstop Corey Seager was placed on the 10-day IL with a hamstring strain. This is already his second stint on the IL with a hamstring strain. What, does he have one of these every month or something? It's not like it's his birthday or something, because you have one of those every month, right? Seager missed less than 2 weeks last time, but this time it's unclear how long Seager is going to be out. I'd expect it to be longer than last time, considering it's an injury to the same spot. So Seager probably out more than 2 weeks. Ezekiel Duran had been filling in at shortstop over the past couple of days, but I think Josh Smith is likely to see the most time at shortstop. He's just been injured for the past couple of days. It's minor, so I think he should be in the lineup at shortstop today. And that affords Jake Berger everyday playing time at first base. He had been platooning with Josh Smith over there, but obviously this is only temporary until Seager returns. Kyle Higashioka was activated from the 10-day IL in a corresponding move. He had been out for 13 days with an intercostal strain. He'll be on the short side of a platoon at DH. That's Kyle Higashioka, who will also be splitting backup catcher duties with Tucker Barnhart for the Rangers. Next, we have third baseman Oswaldo Cabrera, who landed on the 10-day IL with a fractured ankle. I didn't watch, which is probably a good thing. He was taken off the field in an ambulance. I had to Google how long fractured ankles usually last for, and they said 6 to 10 weeks, but it was the AI thing at the top, so I don't know how much you can really trust that. Cabrera probably, though, not going to do anything for 6 weeks at the very least. Very unfortunate there. A different Oswaldo will be Oswald Peraza, as he shifted over to the hot corner yesterday, but I don't know if he's going to be playing there every day, because DJ LeMahieu was activated from the 10-day IL. He had been out for most of the season with calf and hip injuries. He's likely to see time across the infield except for shortstop, which means he'll eat into some of Peraza's playing time at the hot corner. Next, we've got starting pitcher Roki Sasaki, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a right shoulder impingement. He really struggled to a 4.72 ERA and a 16% strikeout rate in his first 8 big league starts. So you have to wonder whether or not this is a phantom IL stint, a classic move by the Dodgers with Sasaki, as he's struggling. They probably didn't want to option him to the minors and risk, you know, hurting his confidence or using one of his options. So he'll spend some time on the IL. I'd expect it to be minimum for Sasaki. JP Fireyson was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but we will talk about Sasaki's rotation replacement in a little bit. Next, though, we'll talk about starting pitcher Ben Lively, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a flexor strain. This is likely to be longer than a minimum stay for Ben Lively, probably out for a few weeks. Zach Kent was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but I expect Doug Nikhazy to return to the majors to replace Lively in the rotation. Our last injury involves outfielder Ian Happ, who's placed on the 10-day IL with an oblique strain, likely to be out with a few weeks, as obliques are always tricky, but that did make room for catcher Moises Ballesteros to be selected from the minors and make his MLB debut on Tuesday. He started at DH for the Cubs. He is one of the club's top prospect, a very good contact hitter, and he'll be on the strong side of a platoon with Justin Turner moving forward. Now we'll discuss some news, starting with starting pitcher Logan Henderson, who's expected to be recalled from the minors today to start in Cleveland. Somewhat intriguing after Henderson found some success in his MLB debut. Ryan Weathers is also expected to start on Wednesday. He is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL after missing the entire season with a forearm strain. I talked about him a couple days ago. Ryan Weathers found some success last year, but I'm definitely watching from afar as he's returning from the IL to face a tough offense in Chicago. Next, we have starting pitcher Colton Gordon, who is expected to be promoted for his MLB debut versus the Royals. He is Houston's number 14 prospect and has pitched to a 2.55 ERA with a 25% strikeout rate in 8 starts at AAA. Not a top prospect, and even if he was, I'd probably be avoiding his MLB debut, but hopefully it goes well for Colton Gordon. And lastly, we have starting pitcher Clayton Kershaw, who is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL on Friday to start versus the Angels. He's been out for the whole season with toe and knee injuries. Last year, Kershaw pitched to a 4.50 ERA with an 18% strikeout rate in 7 starts. It was the first time we really saw Kershaw not look like the god that he's been throughout his career. So maybe he is, what's the opposite of invincible? That's what the word I'm looking for. And that's what Clayton Kershaw appears to be. So I'm going to be watching his debut from afar. Now we'll take a look at some of the notable performances from Tuesday, a day in which we had just 13 games on the slate, as our matchups between the Twins and Orioles and Cardinals and Phillies were postponed due to inclement weather. We'll start off with our hitters, leading off with Javi Baez, who helped the Tigers to win versus the Red Sox, going 2-for-4 with 3 runs, a pair of home runs, 6 RBI, and a walk for good measure. Javi's up to 5 homers on the year now. The first one traveled 392 feet at 106 miles per hour, and the second one traveled 371 feet at 99 miles per hour. And I guess everybody's asking the question, is Javi Baez back? I was skeptical of his lack of power at first, but his aura looked like it returned on Tuesday with his walk-off homer in the 11th. So my skepticism is starting to fade. And since moving to center field, obviously not Baez's natural position, he's batted 365 with all 5 of his homers, his only stolen base, a 980 OPS and a 180 WRC plus. But then that begs the question, can this stick for Javi Baez? His StatCast metrics don't really stand out, but he is sporting a career high 73% contact rate thanks to the most patient approach of his career. And that's very intriguing coming from Javi Baez, not known for being patient at all. And that's really the most important thing for him, is making more contact. And so with the position and approach change for Javi Baez, I think I'm buying in. He's fringy in 12 teamers, but I think you got to take the chance with how well he's performing right now. But he's definitely worth a time in deeper leagues. Next, we'll discuss Josh Jung, who helped the Tigers to win versus the Rockies, or excuse me, the Rangers to win versus the Rockies, going 3-for-4 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 4 runs batted in. He's up to 6 homers on the year now. The first one traveled 396 feet at 106 miles per hour. The second one went 392 feet at 99 miles per hour. I've never really been a huge proponent of Josh Jung. It's likely because of my points league focus and his poor plate discipline, which he somehow improved every year of his career, leading to the best strikeout to walk ratio of his career this year. Jung has also made notable improvements to his contact metrics, and they're all supported by his consistently solid batted ball and StatCast metrics. And with Jung situated in the middle of the Rangers lineup, he's definitely worth the roster spot in standard leagues, especially with the improvements he's made at the plate this year. As long as he can stay healthy, which has been a problem throughout his career, I think Jung is going to be somebody that you're going to enjoy rostering. And lastly, we've got Junior Caminero, who helped the Rays to a win in Toronto, going 1-for-5 with a run, a home run, and 4 runs batted in. It was his 8th homer of the year, and it traveled 419 feet at 109 miles per hour. Caminero hasn't quite lived up to all the hype that made him the number one prospect a couple of years ago. I know he's only 21, but he's just been slightly better than league average at the plate, according to WRC Plus, through 88 career games. His ability to hit the ball hard is promising. He's got like a 50% hard hit rate, but the youngster hasn't learned how to consistently lift the ball or take advantage of the shorter fences down the lines. He's somebody with a higher center field rate than pull or push, so that's not really ideal if you're looking to hit for power. The one area where I see room for improvement for Caminero, though, is in his plate discipline. His strikeout to walk ratio has actually gotten worse this year, but his contact metrics are drastically improved, noticeably an 89% zone contact rate that suggests Caminero will be a boon in the batting average department. And if he can figure out how to tap into that power more, we've already seen 8 home runs, which suggests he could hit close to 30 home runs this year. I think the sky's the limit. This is a guy that could legitimately bat 300 with 40 homers once everything is going right. But I don't think that breakout is coming this year with Caminero's inconsistencies in his spray direction and, I guess, spray height too. But if you'd like more information on notable hitting performances from Tuesday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Jose Soriano, who did all he could, but the Angels lost in San Diego. He tossed 7 scoreless innings, allowing 4 hits and 3 walks while striking out 5, inducing 13 whiffs with 29% CSW across 107 pitches. Soriano was my secondary streaming pick of the day, and it paid off. I didn't really endorse it too much, but hey, it worked. I'll take the victory lap there. Soriano kept his sinker on the edges of the zone for 10 called strikes and 4 whiffs, while his curveball carved up hitters downstairs for 6 whiffs and 52% CSW. The splitter and four-seamer were spotted poorly, but the different looks kept hitters off of the sinker, and his slider was thrown just 5 times. It's usually his go-to number 3 offering, and I'd really like for Soriano to find a reliable third pitch to support that obviously deadly sinker curveball combo. But until then, Soriano's just a streamer against poor offenses. He gets the A's in Sacramento next, and I think I'm going to avoid that one. That offense has been a lot better than advertised. Next, we have Chris Bubich, who did all he could, but the Royals lost in Houston. He tossed 6 1/3 innings, allowing 6 hits and 1 walk and 1 earned run while striking out 9. He induced 22 whiffs with 39% CSW across 93 pitches, and I've been waiting for Bubich to show the spark that got us excited about him early on. Despite pitching well, he's failed to eclipse 14 whiffs or 6 strikeouts across a 6 start stretch before the White Sox woke him up last time out for 16 whiffs and 7 Ks. Well, Bubich really sparked on Tuesday as he deployed exceptional pitch separation against a lineup solely comprised of righties. His four-seamer absolutely cooked upstairs at 93 miles per hour with 18 inches of vert for 13 whiffs and 38% CSW, while he spotted changeups beautifully arm side or downstairs for 8 whiffs and 45% CSW. Bubich also surprised batters by jamming them with sweepers and sliders, combining for 10 called strikes and 37% CSW. And it was honestly impeccable here from Bubich. And I wish we could see this same command from him every time out, but he definitely deserves to be rostered everywhere, even if he's just pitching as he had been previously. Bubich gets the Giants in San Francisco next, and that's a clear auto start. Lastly, we have Mitch Keller, who did all he could, but the Pirates lost in Queens. He tossed 7 innings, allowing 5 hits and 2 earned runs while walking 1 and striking out 8. He induced 13 whiffs with 33% CSW across 96 pitches, and Keller got away with a lot in this one, stealing 19 called strikes across all of his pitches. His four-seamer, which is usually not a great pitch, was oddly successful in this one, inducing 8 whiffs and 43% CSW as he kept it upstairs. To both lefties and righties, it's not an approach he usually employs, so it's somewhat interesting there from Keller, but everything else was not great. His sinker was thrown down the middle almost every single time, and the sweeper was thrown more to lefties than righties, which is not an ideal approach, and really all of his breaking pitches were constantly hung, but he got away with a lot, and he won't be this fortunate next time out. But it is the Reds outside of Great American Ballpark, so maybe Keller can make that work. That lineup is really bad outside of their home ballpark. Maybe Keller can make it work. It's not going to be the best of outings, but as you can see, sometimes Keller gets away with his pitches being thrown down the middle. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Tuesday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Edwin Diaz recorded his 9th save with a hitless 9th. Emmanuel Clase recorded his 9th save with a perfect 9th. Mason Montgomery recorded his first career save as he got the final out of the 9th inning. Pete Fairbanks started the 9th with a 4-run lead, but he proceeded to allow 2 runs, necessitating Montgomery's help to secure the win. Pierce Johnson recorded his first save with a scoreless 9th. I called this one after Raisel Iglesias had pitched on back-to-back days, and guys like Deisbel Hernandez weren't available either, so Pierce Johnson snuck in a save here. Sean Armstrong also recorded his first save of the season as he struck out the side in order. Luke Jackson was hit by a pitch and pulled from a save chance on Monday, so I think he was unavailable yesterday, but Chris Martin was the go-to option as he entered the 9th for a save yesterday, but was pulled with forearm tightness after allowing a hit. So that's back-to-back days in which the Rangers sent out a pitcher in the 9th just to see them leave almost immediately. But here, Sean Armstrong came in and pitched admirably. And now in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Kenley Jansen pitched the 9th in a tie game, and he ended up serving up a 2-run walk-off homer to Fernando Tatis Jr. to take his second loss. Will Vess allowed the zombie runner to score while pitching the ninth and the 10th, but the Tigers still won that one in 11 innings. Aroldis Chapman pitched a perfect ninth in a tie game in that ball game. Emilio Pagan pitched a clean ninth, but then proceeded to allow four runs in the 10th inning to take his second loss. Jeff Hoffman blew up again, surrendering five runs to blow his second save and take his second loss. Jesus Tinoco, who looked like he was starting to claim the closer role in Miami, allowed two runs in the ninth to blow his first save and take his first loss. Andres Munoz surrendered an unearned run while pitching the ninth. Definitely unlucky with an error there. He blew his second save in the process, but the Mariners still won in 11 innings. Luke Weaver was perfect in that one across the eighth and the ninth innings, but obviously the Yankees lost in 11. But if you'd like more information on relievers, check out Rick Graham's weekly articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now look forward to Wednesday, May 14th, a day in which we'll have a packed slate of 17 games as the Twins and Orioles and Cardinals and Phillies will partake in doubleheaders. My matchup of the day is Yoshinobu Yamamoto versus Gunnar Hoglund. Yamamoto is always fun to watch. Despite pitching for the Dodgers, he's really, really good, and I'm a fan of his. While Gunnar Hoglund has looked great across his first few starts, but now he gets a real test against the Dodgers. I really want to see how that fastball and sweeper perform against a legitimate lineup. In terms of probable starters, we've got six guys in the auto starts tier, including Yamamoto. We've also got Tarek Skubal versus the Red Sox, Aaron Nola versus the Cardinals, and Bailey Ober in Baltimore. Our probably starts tier is five guys, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Will Warren as he takes on the Mariners in Seattle. Warren has displayed an improved four-seamer this year with better vertical approach angle, and I think that's going to allow him to find some success here. He was great last time out, and now he gets basically the best ballpark in baseball to pitch in. I think Warren should find some success on Wednesday. I'd also keep an eye out for Eduardo Rodriguez in San Francisco. He's very inconsistent, but when he's on, he's proven that he can strike out a lot of batters. I think he's had three double-digit strikeout performances already this year, so maybe Rodriguez can do that again in San Francisco. In terms of hitter suggestions, I've got to go for Twins and Orioles hitters in their doubleheader. The pitching matchups are Bailey Ober versus Dean Kramer and Simeon Woods Richardson versus the Orioles to be determined starter. I'd also go for Cardinals and Phillies hitters in their doubleheader. We'll see Eric Fetty square off against Jesus Luzardo in game one, and then Sonny Gray versus Aaron Nola in game two. And lastly, I'd go for Rockies and Rangers hitters in Texas. We tried this yesterday. Didn't really work, but Antonio Senzatella versus Patrick Corbin. You got to target that one. Those are not the aces of today's baseball. And now we'll close things out with our relievers to watch. Kenley Jansen has pitched on back-to-back days, so we'll see Ryan Zephyrjohn get a save opportunity if available, or if available for Zephyrjohn to get a save on Wednesday. And lastly, Edwin Diaz has pitched on three of the past 4 days, so Ryan Stanek could see a save opportunity for the Mets on Wednesday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. Tune in live on YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast. And make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.